should come as no surprise to anyone that's known me for any length of time that I love the VHS series. I've always really loved anthology work. When I was really little, one of my first favorite shows I ever remember seeing being captivated by was The Twilight Zone. And I would argue you could look at the Rugrats also in a way as an anthology series, especially when they started getting very imaginative and doing a lot of montage and pastiche. The Outer Limits also follows that tradition. Alfred Hitchcock Presents follows that tradition. High Maintenance, which I also love, kind of follows that tradition in its own way. So most people know kind of that I like horror movies, know that I kind of like found footage, especially if you watched the season two episode of Everything Is Game, the Straight Stuff. But today I wanted to go through the VHS series, and I wanted to kind of showcase my favorites. I actually did a ranking list of all 32 segments, and the 32 segments do include the framing devices. So the framing devices actually, I think, are mostly very special. And I think they deserve honor if they made the top list. I'm going to do the top 13 out of all 32 segments. This list does not include the Snapchat series, it does not include Siren, it does not include Kids versus Alien, it does not include Gorgeous Vortex. So I think I may have seen that on Shudder and been very confused by it because it's not found footage. So it is a little disparate. I actually really liked it, but I didn't understand it enough to know what I was seeing. So I'm gonna go through my top 13. And because my birthday is coming up, probably when you're watching this, it'll be before my birthday still. I may end up posting my full list to my Instagram, or make it like bonus content on our YouTube archive. But in any case, even though I am solo for this episode, you are tuning into Everything Is Gay, Even the Straight Stuff. Cue the music. I try to do a little bit of research on content. I tried not to be too influenced by who exactly was directing them, where they were in the project. If you're a fan of things like Marble Hornets or something like that, I'm probably going to reference those a little bit. They do show up a little bit in kind of pacing. They show up a little bit in how we were participating with content in some of the earlier iterations of the VHS series. I think people need to think about this the same way they approach any anthology of its time. For instance, the Twilight Zone anthology was very, very influenced by Rod Serling's experience in war, just like Lord of the Rings and Peanuts were both influenced by their respective authors' experiences in war and in combat. The VHS series is informed by its time in a lot of ways, and that's both good and bad. There's some really great voyeur aspects VHS does well, which is why I think I like it more than the ABC's Death series. And of course, I talked about being a big fan of Hell House. I do have kind of a heart for a version of found footage. I do kind of like the predictability. I do like the archetypes going in and being silly. I also like when it's broken, though. I like when I'm challenged. I'm going to talk on the list a little bit about camp. I like the challenge of the VHS series because it's pretty obvious there's passion even when it's not necessarily at its best. After about 13, in kind of the latter half of the list, one of my main criteria complaints of the VHS series is that the uneven pacing does cause some segments that could be placed higher to drag a little bit. I think Empty Wake, which is one that's kind of middle of my list for me, I think Empty Wake from VHS 94 suffers a little bit from dragging in the middle. And I think it's supposed to build tension, and it sort of does. And I think Empty Wake is kind of a unique take on the Waking Dead trope a little bit. And I'm going to also explain some of these, by the way, because some of the titles don't do justice to the actual thing that's happening. A couple of things I was surprised by on this list before I get in here, stuff that's not in the list that I thought was going to make it. From VHS 2, A Ride in the Park, where we see the zombie apocalypse starting, did not make the list, which I was a little surprised by. A lot of you might think that something like Dream Kill from 85 is probably on this list. And I think it would be on the list, except it's a little long. And some of the themes in a couple of the other ones that appear on the list actually, it's there. So, like, I have shredding on the list, and I think that kind of anti-establishment punk thing is seen in Dream Kill. So that's why it's not higher in the list. I was very surprised that Total Copy as a framing device was not higher. So Total Copy is the framing device from 85. That's the Rory, and that's the hard copy spoof, the one where the alien child is watching TV and kills his handlers and has them mimic what he sees on TV. I thought those three especially would be higher. I'm not surprised by the lowest ones on the list. I'm a little surprised by Second Honeymoon, but every time I tried to figure out where to put on the list, I just couldn't hold on to it. So Second Honeymoon is actually the lowest on my list. Sick Thing Happened to Emily from the first one is also on the list. Number one isn't represented very much in my top 13. So you may have umbrage with that because a lot of people that love the VHS series love the first VHS. I came in late into the franchise, and I think that probably shows in my list. And of course, you have your own list, and I want to hear from you about these placements, because if you want to like argue with me and you really liked Ambrosia, I thought Ambrosia was also going to be higher on my list because I actually really love the voyeuristic aspect of peeking into the serial killer party. But Ambrosia got beat out by some ones that are really high players, and I actually think my top six are probably the six best segments thus far. I know they are filming another one that's supposed to come out either later this year or next year, so my list will have to be redone, which is kind of the fun of this. But I just want to really talk about this anthology series because there's so few new anthology series I get really excited about. Like, I spend every New Year's Day, almost every year I've done a New Year's Day tradition, it's involved a Twilight Zone marathon. So when I find something like, I can stick with it. But I've talked a lot. So, using my playwright brain, using my pop culture knowledge, I'm going to give you the top 13 of my VHS experience. And I'm going to start off with my number 13, which was a surprise. It actually went back and forth on the list in several places. But I kind of want to talk about this one a little bit. I think it's interesting. So my number 13 is from VHS 2. This is Phase 1 Clinical Trials. It is about Herman and Clarissa. And what I really love about this is that this is about the idea of disability and prosthetic. We see this again a little bit in The Terror. It's this idea of kind of perfection. I have a story of a friend of a friend who was a wheelchair user, and they were kind of big into Christianity, and at their funeral, everyone was like, they can walk now. There was a big celebration about them being able-bodied, but their ministry had been about them being in a wheelchair, like, and how that was okay. And so I like how Phase One Clinical Trials actually kind of looks at the idea of ability and what it means to have loss of or embracing of. I love that Clarissa was deaf at birth, I think. And so her cochlear implant has a different connotation than Herman's eye replacement. I like that it has that same really cool device that the David Tennant Hamlet had, where it's how the audience sees, and that function is really important to the story. Phase one clinical trials does feel like a longer piece, but it doesn't feel long in that it drags. It feels long in that there's a lot of story to deliver. It feels long because it's in one location with a little bit of a tag before in the doctor's office. It also does something really well that VHS doesn't shy away from, which is use of sex both in positive and negative. Sex here is a distraction. There is punishment later, but it doesn't feel like the sex created the punishment, which is sort of a trope in horror films sometimes. I also like that it's not explained. I think we've gotten used to cinema that has to explain itself and dumb itself down slightly and has to make sure everybody absolutely understands what's going on at all times in order to succeed. And I am so happy that Phase One Clinical Trials does not tell you why you can see the ghosts. I kind of like the idea that it could be a ghost in the machine. I like the idea that it's unknown. I like the idea that they are just beset by ghosts, like we could all be currently beset by ghosts. I'm a big fan of phase one clinical trials because I think there's a lot to it in the story being told. And I think that is really important to learn how to tell that story and to let the story be the size it needs to be. Phase one clinical trials is big. And it's comfortable in its bigness, it's comfortable with its place. And I think that comfort lends that eeriness because you kind of expect the guy's apartment to be comfortable, and it's never really comfortable for long. It's kind of got a Paranormal Activity vibe to it, a little bit of a possession thing. I think it's found footage, it's pretty classical technique, and I really love it. So from VHS2, that's phase one clinical trials. That's number 13. Number 12 from VHS, the first one, is 10/31/98. Now, this is kind of a riff on an urban legend where phase one clinical trials takes place earlier in the film. Film, I guess we'll call it a film. 10/31/98 is kind of the ending of the film, and there's an alternative ending to it. Unlike tape 49, tape 56 is not the finale that wraps everything up. 10/31/98 wraps up VHS one. This is that urban legend of you rescue someone and you get them in the car and then they disappear and bad things happen. I love that the guys get stuck in the car even though they try to do the right thing. Unlike Second Honeymoon, no one really seems bad except for the bad people. This one specifically reminded me slightly of Curse of Aurore. I'm probably saying that wrong. But Curse of Aurore is a found footage that takes place in Canada. There's international travel. 10/31/98, I think, is an underrated one. It was originally 13, but phase one clinical trials just demanded to be talked about. And so 10/31/98, which is the finale of the first VHS, I can see why it's a finale. It's very strong, it's very assertive. It gives you that white knight, but everything goes wrong scenario. And it leads really well into what VHS2 is going to be and how it subverts tropes. I would argue 10/31/98 works well within VHS1 because a lot of VHS1 is about sexual politics. It's about men and women. I like VHS2 slightly better only because you actually see some peen in VHS2, which is not something you get a lot of in horror movies. We're still very shy about showing male genitalia, which is a really weird, interesting thing to note, especially about horror. Like even in when it was happening in True Blood, it was still so revolutionary. There's something really interesting about 10/31 98 and how it gives you the vibe of other things like Christopher Rory, but I think Christopher Rory came after. 10/31/98 is just really nice. It's what kind of you expect from found footage. It gives you that twist. I'm a big fan of cults, as you're gonna see, and so there's a like an unknown cult. There's an exorcism thing. So for all of you that love To Hell and Back, which may or may not be on this list, there's that kind of scratching that itch for you. So 10/31/98, which is number 12. So now let's talk God of Death. So God of Death is probably not on many people's top 13 list of the VHS franchise. And that's okay. I don't know that it's necessarily my favorite. It's not one I have to stop and watch, but I think it's really important. It's camp. It's high camp horror, which is not something you see a lot of. If you watch a lot of Dracula, you get high camp horror. If you watched Wreck, which I believe is set in a South American country, I'm not actually sure which one. I could be wrong about that. I apologize if I am. But a lot of Central American and South American horror does not get represented in anthology work. And it's a real shame because it's a very interesting thing. The framing of God of Death is a little strange. It does feel slightly out of place. You don't know where it's going. It doesn't feel like it should be in the VHS franchise. It does some very important, valuable work with how we tell story. VHS Viral is not well liked in the VHS fandom, I feel like, and I feel like it's wrong. I think VHS Viral is very interesting on its own. And I think God of Death sort of gives a nod to that. I think something that we struggle with is what is camp in horror. I think we kind of trained ourselves out of it because we're so afraid to go back to the 80s slasher flick. We made so much fun of the tropes. But I want you to watch God of Death and watch it for its surreality. I want you to watch how they go under the earth. I want you to watch how the gods appear. I think there's something really special about God of Death where if you take your horror so seriously, you miss it. I like that Eddie has this very ineffectual, afraid sort of thing going on. I like the twist in it. God of Death, even though it's not very high on the list for me, really is one of the ones where it is what has made the VHS series singularly unique in a way. I also think that outside of horror, it does a really interesting thing with who is in charge and who is mouthpiece, who is telling the story after the main characters have passed away. I think probably the nod to the date, September 19th, is very important, but I didn't do any research on that, so I don't want to like say that and then be completely wrong. I think God of Death is very special. I think it's something only VHS could have done. And even though it doesn't rank very high on my top 13 list, I think it's really important to talk about. And I think it is slightly better because it plays more. That's why it's higher than Phase 1 of Clinical Trials and higher than 10/31/98. It doesn't get much higher than that. It's still not really cracking my top 10. I think it's. It just cracks my top 10, actually. It just cracks my top 10. God of Death was special, and I really wanted to give a nod to it. I think it's really important. I don't think we see enough Central American horror. I don't think we get enough about Mexican mythology in our horror, especially in America, especially where indie horror has such a high level of knowledge base, and like people work really hard to make their indie horror, especially with streaming services like Shudder buying stuff. It feels weird we don't have more of that. And God of Death is magnificent camp, and I think it knows what it is, and it's not afraid to be it. And I think if you're making a short horror film, God of Death is not a bad way to look, especially if you're trying something that's very specific to your culture. So that was God of Death. And we're going to Suicide Bid. And this is the story of poor Lily. This is the kind of claustrophobia, bonding gone wrong. This is where we're going to start seeing the effect of me coming in late to the series really starts to take hold here. I was surprised Suicide Bid made it this high. It kept climbing the list. I don't know if it's kind of my love for Dragula. I don't know if like I like being challenged in that kind of claustrophobia thing. I don't know if it's because I love a, like last minute twist ending or what it is. But I think there's something really cool about the retelling of the story that comes true. I like Lily as sort of a final girl archetype, but twisted around. I like doing stuff late at night in a cemetery. I like that it has that collegiate, we're gonna live forever, but definitely about to die sort of thing. I think Suicide Bid 2 is such a wonderfully charged title for a segment. Because there are gonna be some places where you can't use words like that. You can't use the word suicide in a lot of places. Like you have to use unalive, which is an unwieldy and twee phrase, but I think Suicide Bid is pretty good. I like that it's unafraid of the word. I like that it kind of takes on hazing, but it also doesn't take the shine off of it. It doesn't seem to pass judgment on what hazing is other than to punish the people doing it. It does give me some of that kind of fraternity sorority horror without the overt sexism and misogyny of the last time we had that kind of horror. I don't know how it competes with something like Terror Train, which I haven't yet seen, but it's on my list. Suicide Bid. It's not too high on the top 13 list, but it get pretty high on the list, to be honest. So Suicide Bid was on VHS 99. Now, if you watch VHS 99, To Hell and Back is the kind of finale of VHS 99. And this was very quirky, not in a camp way. It's almost like I could tell they went on location to film and saw it and thought this would be the perfect hell. Like every time I watch it, I am stunned and envious, and I want to know where exactly they were and how they got a permit or how they got around not having a permit to do it. I love the twist at the end. I love the twist at the beginning. I love this movement into hell, but not going into almost nearly not going into traditional hell. I like that the characters freak out. I like that it's kind of the survival thing. And I like that this tone of survival and movement and pacing is a part of the later VHS movie franchise. Up until Viral, VHS did feel slightly disjointed. That was part of its charm. But there's something about the later entries that even when they start looking a little too slick, there is a movement to them that you notice. You feel like you're going somewhere. You feel like people are traveling in their experiences and it's not quite so settled. To Hell and Back is very cute. I know people that are big fans of Mabel. I very much enjoy the you don't know what's going to happen after New Year's Eve sort of thing. I like this is kind of twisting that Hamlet, trope of when the cock crows. It's a really great trope to twist, because that comes all the way from Shakespearean times of the idea of until you hear the rooster crow when it's morning, nothing is safe. That's when the ghosts come out to play. And here the ghosts are demons that are just kind of living their life and reveling and looking for food. And Mabel's like, oh, you're new demons. All right. She doesn't even question it. I think it's fun. I do love fun in my horror movies. I'm a big fan of Vincent Price. I'm a big fan of Matthew Lillard and 13 Ghosts. It's fun. And I think that's something that we got, especially from 99. It felt in 99 that people were being very playful, and we're going to see 99 again come up a couple times. I don't know that 99 is necessarily my favorite. People that know me will figure out what my favorite is as we go up the list. But I think 99 probably comes in very close to second place, if not second place. To Hell and Back, I think is pretty special. And if you haven't seen it, I hope that you enjoy the vision of hell because it's very sparse, but it also kind of looks like a canyon or a dune you'd see in like California, Arizona. I think that's pretty awesome. I did not think this would be very high on the list at all. I thought this would be pretty low, but I went back to rewatch it for this. Like specifically, I watched them with the intent of, hey, how are these in relation to each other? What are these saying? What is their use of space? What is their use of filming? And TKNOGD, the God of Technology, the virtual reality God. Yes, it is 1985, so it does look a little dated. It does look a little tranny. Yes, the kind of Rent over the moon performance artist thing is a little silly. But the God of Technology is terrifying. And listening to Ada Lovelace call for their new God and actually meet them, and they're terrifying, that is just an amazing, like, the amount of times she could have pulled out before it was too late for her to pull away. And then when she tries to pull away, she can't. The story of Ada, this kind of very cautionary tale that's it's very Greek in a way. The more I watched TKNOGD and thought about it, not just as VHS, but as this look at kind of this new cautionary tale of how we create gods. There's something almost slightly, not quite Atlas Shrugged about it. There's something about creation of gods in this. Again, because it is 1985 is when 85 is set. It is slightly dated, but I think that's an important thing to realize is that for a long time, the internet looked like Tron. In 1985, that was cutting edge. And the idea that since 1985, the God of Technology has only gotten stronger and more bloodthirsty terrifies me. And I don't get terrified a lot from the VHS series. The VHS series for me is kind of this charming thing that I participate with in sort of a B movie marathon sort of way. And I really love it in a way. I don't do callbacks like I do for Rocky Horror. But there's something kind of Roger Corman-esque about this. A little bit 50s, a little 60s, not quite exploitation-y. But TKNOGD is fantastic and terrifying. It could have easily gone in the wrong direction with the wrong actress playing Ada. Could have gotten a little too. I don't want to use the word shrill because I don't like to talk about female presenting people as shrill by any stretch, but I don't know what other word to use. So any other person playing that performance artist could have fallen really hard. But Ada does such a good job, and you just keep thinking, pull back, someone in the audience, pull her back, get her out of there. You could see it going south, and you could see that loss of control. Which is also sort of part of the VHS brand is how loss of control happens. And I think there's something really interesting about TKNOGD and about control, about gods. It feels very Greek. It feels very tragedy. And we're in the audience. And it's so cool to be in the audience of the audience, not the audience all at the same time. I'm so envious of Natasha Kermani and Zoe Cooper because they wrote it, they directed it, and it's phenomenal. We're going to start getting into everything that I'm just going to call phenomenal. So you're going to probably hear that a lot. But I mean it with great affection. And I think that should be recognized too. I don't think we should shy away from things and being phenomenal, from being able to celebrate things that are just incredible pieces of art for us. I think phenomenal is good. And I want to celebrate the VHS series. And because it's close to my birthday, we're going to do what I want. So that's TKNOGD from VHS 85. And now we're going to go to VHS 94. And we're going to talk about Storm Drain. I like Storm Drain. I do think there's a bit at the end of Act One before we start meeting the people in the sewer where it does drag just slightly, where I'm waiting for what's the payoff for this. But then the payoff is so good. Not necessarily Ratma themselves is so good, but the legacy Ratma leaves. Ratma is one of those things that is sort of that icon that you can create. Ratma brings me great joy. Storm Drain is a little lower on the list than I thought it would be, but I'm not surprised. Storm Drain is in my top 13. When I tell people about the VHS series, I often point them to Storm Drain. You get a little bit of that WNUF special to it, a little bit of that Chris Avarore introduction thing. I'm going to see Late Night with the Devil. It gives you a little bit of Late Night with the Devil in a little bit of way. Storm Drain is about ambition. It's about throwing caution to the wind and not listening to yourself. It has that labyrinthian feel of one of my other favorite pieces. When I think about what the VHS series does and the fact that Storm Drain comes in literally almost dead center of the series in 94, I just think it's kind of showcasing the best of what they've learned thus far in how they curate and how they cast and how they write and how they direct and how they create iconic moments. And as we go forward, we're going to see more of those iconic moments, especially for me. Maybe for you, maybe not. Who knows? I mean, I'm the one trapped in the attic, right? Storm Drain, all hail Ratma. Don't let the acid eat your eyeballs on the way out. Ratma did influence one of my tabletop gaming things that I did as well. It was kind of fantastic. Storm Drain from 94 is incredible and not to be counted out. It almost beat out the next highest on the list. We're not yet to the top five, as far as I can tell. Hopefully, I can count. Storm Drain, otherwise known as the Ratma segment, kind of amazing. This next one is going to be very, very controversial. I have read the internet, so I know everything is controversial here, but specifically Vicious Circles, which is the framing device of VHS Viral. People loathe this for some reason. I can't quite figure out what it is. Maybe it's because it's so different from one and two. It's such a departure. The ice cream truck of death is slightly on the nose, but it's amazing. It's a pale horse with the rider of technology. I mean, you can kind of see where TKNOGD would get the energy from. I think the framing device for VHS Viral is incredible. I think the fact that we participate in it, the fact we're voyeurs in it, the fact we're helpless, the fact that we watch people die, the fact we watch people follow it. I mean, if you're a fan of the This Is America Childish Gambino video, You cannot say shit about this because I mean they're not parallel, but the symbolism is there. You know, if you're a Good Omens fan, it kind of scratches that itch a little bit for you. There's something great about this ice cream truck. There's a great about how it's a siren call. It's a great parallel about safety. It's a little on the nose about people not paying attention and being glued to their phones. It does feel a little bit get off my lawn-y, if you want to read that way into it. But I think this ice cream truck, pale horse rider of death thing is incredible. I love it as kind of a new horseman of the apocalypse. I love it as part of this like weird sacrosanct Christian mythology that we are just so hyper focused on, especially in America. I think Vicious Circles is really good. I think it's as good as any piece that is about someone trying to pull someone else back from the brink and failing and watching them lose it, leaving them, being destroyed by it. I know a lot of people are going to disagree with that, but you're wrong. Just be real about this. Vicious Circles, looking at it kind of through a mythological lens, is brilliant. The ending is a little trite. I will give it that. It could have had a different ending, but maybe that's what they wanted, and that's okay. We don't have to agree on that. I think everything up until the ending is strong enough that I can live with the ending because it gave me everything else I needed. Vicious Circles was incredible, and if I could ever figure out how to do a giant vehicular costume for a Comic-Con, I would consider it pretty heavily, probably. It's a Vicious Circles from VHS Viral. It's kind of smack dab in the middle here of our top 13 VHS segment list. Bitch Cat is amazing. I know this is a real song because back when I used Twitter, people kept pointing me to the song because after I saw VHS 99, I absolutely fell in love with this like infectious pop punk, not quite goth, but really trying it sort of neo crow thing that was going on. Wreck for all of their youth. I just kept waiting for when they were going to be stabbed, and then it was very satisfying when they were. It was great to have one of them walk off and be like, nope, not going to do it. Shredding is one of the ones that is not just fun, but it's creepy, it's a little weird. I do love the color palette of it. I don't think there's enough of that. I love its use of location. As a found footage piece, I think it really succeeds. And I'm very much in love with the song that Bitch Cat makes. I think there's something wonderful about the reanimation, the possession. I think the song is great, it's catchy. And then right after Shredding is Suicide Bid. And it's a strong duo. You don't really get you don't get a framing narrative. I think because this is the one with toy soldiers, the one with the Medusa Gorgon, which doesn't rank very high, people don't really consider the toy soldiers Gawkers thing a framing narrative. I was very intrigued by it because I had really loved the framing narrative previously, you know, obviously. And I just kept waiting for the payoff and I got it. But Gawkers, I don't find it to be very strong personally. Shredding is incredible. And it's such a perfect age because it's like, yes, of course you're going to name the band after yourself, and the band's name is going to be an acronym. I'm a big fan of, I'm just a big fan of shredding. I think it's fun. The song is very memorable. The ghosts are just wicked with the pleasure themselves. They remind me of the head villain guy from Hell House a little bit, you know. I like when the villain is like, yes, I'm a villain, I'm here to be villain, and it all works out really, really well. I'm very happy with that. Now we're gonna go back to VHS Viral. And we're gonna talk about probably the gayest segment of the VHS franchise. And this is saying something, because I think there's something very, very queer about the VHS series. Parallel Monsters is the one about the parallel universe where people's genitalia are demons and they like have like demon blimps in the sky and people are comfortable cruising in a park and like their demon genitalia eats like sacrifices and then has sex or something like that. I don't know. It's never made clear. There's something really great Parallel Monsters does is it interacts at the intersection of horror and science fiction because the person has to work to get to the parallel world. They don't just fall into it. You really do feel for the wife from the non-parallel universe because she's just trying to sleep. I love this obsession Cask of Amontillado thing. I like that it feels like it's just going to be a parent trap situation until you realize, holy shit, this guy's over his head. This one is set in Spain, so this has got that lovely European flair that I love. Most people that know me know that I kind of love European found footage. I tend more toward French or German. I think Korean is probably still my top international found footage, but this is like a very Spanish tale. There's something really great, very sexual, very aggressive, very strange. This is that kind of cautionary tale you pull back from a little bit, like reading Chuck Palahniuk a little bit. I think Parallel Monsters, like whatever Nacho Vigalondo, whose name I'm butchering, I'm sure, was going for, I think they hit. I love that it has a puppet feel instead of CGI. I love that I don't get what the blimp is. I love the idea of there's maybe a curfew going on. I love that Marta seems to be in control of herself when she needs to be, especially the like Marta, I think it's Marta. I hope I've got the name right. Yeah. Alfonso is the guy, and then Marta's the wife. And it's such a cool gender dynamic. It's such a cool cautionary tale, such a cool nod to Alice, but not quite Alice. Just as a version of genitalia, the like hints at homosexuality, just very bravado hints of homoeroticism. It's so good. And not that I didn't want to go there, but Parallel Monsters just takes me to a place where I'm not surprised it is my top four. Like, I'm not surprised. My top five do not surprise me, but I wanted to give everything a fair shot. But having Shredding be my fifth one and Parallel Monsters being my number four makes a lot of sense. I think if you overlook VHS Viral, you miss Parallel Monsters. And that is bad. You need to see Parallel Monsters if you've not watched VHS Viral. I want you to give VHS Viral the chance if you've been like, the internet doesn't like it, therefore I'm not going to like it. Give it a chance, you will surprise yourself. And Parallel Monsters will be one of those things that surprises you because it's so big. It's amazing what can be done on the budget these people had to make what they made. I think about Parallel Monsters all the time, especially in the morning at the bus stop. All right, so we're gonna go from Parallel Monsters back to VHS 99. I want to talk about Ozzy's Dungeon. Ozzy's Dungeon felt like it was a big part of the promo for this VHS, and rightly so. I'm a big fan of games like Double Dare because that was what was on when I was a kid, or these game shows from when you were a kid. Ozzy's Dungeon is sort of based on the real life Mark Summer anecdote about some kid almost breaking their neck in one of the first episodes, the first season. So the dad got everything they wanted. I love the twist of the wish monster. I love that you don't actually know what the wish is. I love that the family gets so twisted on revenge, they go through like this Jekyll and Hyde thing. I love that the kid at the center of it, then as an adult in a wheelchair, or with at least some sort of mobility issue, just doesn't feel the revenge in the same way. It's such an incredibly diverse and complicated piece. And I think that I don't know where else it would have come from. And I think it's very special. Ozzy's Dungeon takes our love for nostalgia and completely trashes it, which I love because as a person that thrives on nostalgia, because I built a whole podcast around it essentially, Ozzy's Dungeon takes what I love and thrashes it, and throws it against the wall like the meat sack it is. And I think Ozzy's Dungeon is just an incredible piece. Making the guy relive that obstacle course and making it dangerous, showing how much revenge can twist a person's inside with whatever reason they have for revenge. Oh, it's so good. It's very Sweeney Todd. It's very melodramatic. I think it's probably horror at some of its best elements in a short amount of time. Ozzy's Dungeon at VHS 99 is just one I'm going to go back to. And I think it's great. I know people really, really kind of fell in love with the VHS series early on. I don't know if other people love the later movies as much as me, but I gotta be honest, as someone that came in later to the franchise, I'm such a big fan of the later VHSs. I think they feel different. I think you can probably look at VHS Spiral and you can probably like have the first three or have the first two and then have the later four because they do feel a little different. And that's not bad. I'm not saying that's bad. I think the VHS Viral series can hold both of those very well. I think there's places in later ones where it does feel static. I think the framing device for Total Copy does have a static feel with a very big point to it. Dream Kill feels very static and a little claustrophobic. Ambrosia is like that a little bit. So I don't think it's bad by any stretch, but it does feel, it has a bit of a different feeling later on the series goes, and I like that. And speaking of different feelings, we're going to move on to my second favorite in this franchise. And this is from VHS 2. And see, I watched these films in reverse order. So I started in 94 and then I worked backwards and then I watched the new ones. I was gobsmacked by Safe Haven. I am such a fan of cult documentations. I am such a fan of kind of that end of the world thing. I love Safe Haven. I got no sense that they were going to get trapped in that school. I knew it was bad. It was creepy. I was pretty sure it was just like a Full Hill Bop thing. But when the people came back to life after they had like drugged themselves, the whole thing with the birthing scene, it's just so unexpected. Safe Haven is a gem in my mind. I love that Safe Haven has an international feeling to it. I love that it's like, I'm pretty sure it's not set in America. I'm gonna double check. I'm 99% sure. Safe Haven, okay. So Safe Haven is in Indonesia, and it's the cult known as Paradise Gates, which, by the way, great name for cult. Good marketing. Good job. The Time of Reckoning, it's just such a classic great way to say, hey, it's time for everything to go badly. That feeling of being trapped that's so quintessential to a lot of horror games is here in Safe Haven. The fact that no one survives, which is that kind of nod to 28 Days Later, is really great. Any nod to Baphomet is a good day for me in a horror film. And the foreboding of Lena becoming ill during talking with Father, and then knowing things are about to go downhill. It's so good. With the idea they had to get permission. I just think Safe Haven is probably, it only just barely got beat out by my number one. It's also great because this is also the part where the tape 49 interlude framing starts to go really south for people watching the tape and people start to disappear and be murdered. Safe Haven leads directly into that and never lets up on that in that house that they barricaded themselves in. I am a big fan of Safe Haven. I was not ready for it, and I just think it's incredible and charming and violent. And if you're one of the people that hasn't seen the older VHS movies, because either they have an ardent fan base that you feel like you can't be part of, or the VHS earlier movies don't look interesting to you, try it anyways. Because Safe Haven is part of the second one. The one, what is it called? So the guys that have the vampire, I think it is in one of these earlier ones as well. Safe Haven is incredible, man. And I feel so lucky to have seen it because it's such a good take on end of the world cult and possession birth. It's great. It rocks. Rocks my socks off. It only pales in comparison to my number one pick, which is going to be probably slightly controversial. So you may have noticed I do talk about the framing devices because I count them kind of as their own thing, because all put together, it's enough to make one sort of loose story. Holy Hell and the cover of VHS 94, which is what got me interested in the VHS series. I think Holy Hell is the best part of the VHS series. I think the reveal of the two female cops being part of the Suicide Girls, I think it's what they call them, if I remember correctly, the iconography of the different body parts, the overplaying message, the static, the TVs in the different places, in the different rooms where you feel lost, where we slowly watch the SWAT team get consumed by this building and give themselves to it. Holy Hell is so incredibly shocking in the best way. It is found footage that marries horror found footage with kind of that adventure found footage that we started seeing with movies like End of Watch. Holy Hell, as iconography, is so loud, visually impulsive. It really gives you what you need without necessarily needing to see the segments, and there are so many questions that aren't answered. The nod to the guy that runs the video store, which is sort of a Shudder and a horror history thing, the idea that you can decode something that's going to doom you in a sort of Dan Brown way. Holy Hell was my entrance into the VHS series. And if I had entered it any sooner, I don't know that I would have gotten it. VHS Viral is good, don't get me wrong. And 94 is incredible, 99 is incredible, but if I had started at 94, I don't know if I would have watched 99. And then I would have missed a whole bunch of really cool stuff. As much as I love Viral, I do think probably 94 is my favorite. And then I'm probably going to say, based on what I've got on the list, probably 99 and then Viral. 85 puts up a really good fight. I don't think there's anything wrong with 85. I think each one of them has their charm. The list is actually pretty even across all of them except for one and two. But two makes an appearance very high and very low in my top 13. And one dukes it out. I'm glad that we have the VHS series. I'm glad they're still making VHS movies. And I'm glad when I talk about the VHS series with friends, just kind of offhand with friends like horror films, and I say the VHS series, they go, oh, and their eyes light up. And they have a favorite scene they want to talk about. They get animated, they get excited. And I love that. I love when you get animated ex and excited about your favorite films, your favorite anthologies, your favorite moments. I love when someone comes up to me and is like, so Tim Curry and Fern Gully, right? And then I get to go Tim Curry and Fern Gully, right? And I feel like VHS does that. I feel like VHS does such a real great job at this. And so in celebration, I'm going to go back over the 13, starting at 13, go back to one, a sort of way to end cap this episode. Thank you for joining me. And thank you for being part of this celebration. And if you're favorite of the 32 segments didn't crack my top 13, I want you to get in touch with me. You know, leave a message on the Instagram comment for this video. Well, for the link to the video as it were. You know, leave a comment wherever you're listening to our podcast. Get in touch with us via our archive on YouTube. But like, if you're ride or die for Ride in the Park, if you're big on No Wake, if you really want to fight for tape 49, which is the framing device for VHS 2 from the house, and you think it's stronger and I'm not giving enough credit to the Private Eye storyline, tell me about it, you know? Let's talk about it. Let's make it a real thing, 'cause it's very exciting. But here are my top 13 segments slash framing devices that you'll find in the current, as of now, VHS series, bearing in mind that I have not seen Gorgeous Vortex that I remember. I have not seen the Snapchat stories, so I have no idea if they're any good. I have not seen Siren. And I didn't really care for Kids versus Aliens. Slumber Party Alien Abduction, like, ranked very low for me. I just find it too disorienting to follow. I don't think it's very good, to be honest with you. It just wasn't for me, which is fine. If you love it, tell me about it. Tell me why you love it. Tell me what alien abduction found footage really does for you. And that's okay. And I'm so excited to hear from you. But here's my top 13. So we're going to start from 13, then go back to one. So from VHS 2, got Phase 1, Clinical Trials. From VHS 1, we've got 103198. From VHS 85, we've got God of Death. From VHS 99, we've got Suicide Bid. From VHS 99, again, we have To Hell and Back. From VHS 85, we have TKNOGD. From VHS 94, we have Storm Drain. From VHS Viral, which is the third one, we have Vicious Circles. From VHS 99, we have Shredding. From VHS Viral, we have Parallel Monsters. From VHS 99, we have Ozzy's Dungeon. From VHS2, we have Safe Haven, and my best and favorite segment of the VHS series thus far, the framing device for VHS 94, Holy Hell. I want to thank you for joining me on this strange journey, this bifurcated journey, this journey that feels much like the VHS series, where it's little segments and one big segment. And thank you for joining me. And if we got a lot of feedback, I will do the whole list. I'll do a whole episode where I'll literally go through the whole list. I'll do a live watch of the new movie whenever it comes out, if that's what people want. If there's like a real desire to talk about the VHS franchise, or you have another favorite anthology series you want me to watch, I'm all for it. Give me the recommendations. Give Magnus the recommendations. Magnus also loves found footage. That's why we did an episode on it. But we'd love to hear from you. So get in touch with us. It's the internet. There's definitely a way. I will see you next time. We will see you next time, Magnus and I, on Everything is Gay, Even the Straight Stuff. Have a gay evening.